Welcome to the Independent RX Forum with Pharmacy Times and the National Community Pharmacists Association, the leading advocate and business education resource for America's independent pharmacists.
I'm John Beckner, Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives for NCPA, and I'm joined today by Doug Hoy, CEO of NCPA. Doug, it's good to be with you.
Hi, John. Always good to see you.
So NCPA represents more than 19,000 community pharmacies across the country, and that's roughly the same number of locations as the top three chain stores combined. So periodically, we survey our members to get a sense, get a picture of what's happening in the market. And with the release of the most recent survey this week, we found some pretty interesting results. Can you reflect on that survey this morning?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, we always want to know. NCPA, it's very important to us that we have our finger on the pulse of what's important to our members. We never want to be some ivory tower, theoretical type of organization. And so the feedback from our members is really taken to heart. And what it showed was it was actually pretty consistent with things that we're hearing in the marketplace, that there are labor shortages that are having an impact on our members' businesses, that they're concerned about Washington, D.C. policies that could affect their bottom line and their ability to be an employer and stimulate the local economies in their communities. And there's also a lot of business coming their way. You know, the business from the vaccines, business from testing, plus that time of year where it's a busy time of year in the pharmacy. So the feedback is really helpful for us to be able to report to legislators, report to media. Hey, here's what's going on with independent pharmacies and legislators. Here's how you can and should be trying to help these small businesses.
Let's talk a little bit. Let's focus on the labor issues first, because they've been pretty severe across the board, not just in pharmacies, but in other businesses. And as you mentioned, you know, roughly two-thirds of our members say they're struggling to find help. The major positions that they're struggling with are the pharmacy techs. And certainly, you know, throughout the pandemic, community pharmacies have been providing, you know, lots of services, whether it's administering immunizations, testing, you know, counseling patients, being a trusted source. And techs have really helped out in enabling pharmacists to provide those services. So maybe you could talk a little bit about labor and how these labor issues are affecting our members, our community pharmacies.
Yeah, John, you mentioned, I mean, it's affecting industries across the country, and pharmacy certainly impacted by that. And in particular with pharmacy technicians, where there is some training required to administer the vaccinations. And there's some training that is needed and necessary to be back behind the counter, helping the pharmacist take care of patients. So the training of technicians to have the skill set that pharmacists need, you know, not everyone has that. But as a technician, you have to have certain training. And we are also seeing our members reported some shortages with the sales clerk, sales associate on that side as well. Finding people who are, you know, willing to come in, some hesitancy about coming into work and finding those workers. We're also seeing pressure on having increased wages. We've seen that across the country, and it's no different in pharmacies, except using the restaurant analogy, in a restaurant, if they have to increase the wages, the menu prices increase, which anyone who's eaten out recently or gone to the grocery store, you've seen some increased prices on the menu. Pharmacies can't do that. The PBMs decide what the price of the drug is going to be. They decide what the reimbursement to the pharmacy will be. As I've said many times, they're the judge, the jury, and the executioner on all things to do with pharmaceutical pricing. So that's an added challenge for our folks. And something's going to have to change there if our costs are increasing, but our reimbursement is flat or too often going down.
I think despite the challenges, the good side of that story is our guys have remained open. They've had to make some adjustments. And I know some of our counterparts in the chains have elected to shut their doors, at least to prescription filling, and kept them open for testing and immunization. So thankfully, our guys have been able to adjust and keep operating.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you raised that point, John, because pharmacies often get lumped in together as, you know, a pharmacy is a pharmacy. And of course, we know that's not true. There's a big difference between an independent pharmacy and the big box chain drugstores as far as level of service, and many other things as well. And that's one thing, you know, we've seen a number of media stories around the big box stores where they haven't provided the staffing that's necessary, or they haven't been able to find the staffing that's necessary. I've heard a number of our members who have said that the chain in their community is no longer taking new patients. I heard that from a member just yesterday because they're too busy. They're too busy and they don't have the staffing support. Or if a patient calls in a refill or if a new prescription is prescribed, it may be a day or two or three before that patient can pick it up because they're too busy giving COVID shots or flu shots and they don't have the staffing to support that. For the independents, we're telling a different story. We're telling a story that no patient is turned away, even in situations where a patient may not be able to be given a vaccination at that moment. The pharmacy will give them an alternative time, maybe the next day or maybe in an hour or two. But we know that independents find a way to make it happen, often at their own personal sacrifice. We know a lot of owners who, when they're not able to find that support help, they're the ones taking on the extra hours and taking on the extra burden. So thank goodness for independent pharmacies that they're able to adjust, and they're always hardworking independent pharmacists out there, but they're even harder working during this time. And really the country owes them a debt of gratitude to make sure the job's getting done.
Yeah, clearly the pandemic has showcased all the good things that have come out of community pharmacy. So, Doug, the national news these days is dominated by stories about inflation, supply chain issues. You just talked about labor shortages. These other conditions are also affecting pharmacy. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, that was another interesting part of the survey, is that a large percentage are experiencing shortages. And then we asked members to name names, you know, what kind of shortages are you experiencing? But I would guess 25 to 30% or more were over-the-counter products. And several of our members mentioned cough and cold as one of the areas where they're having shortages. So there were a couple of the prescription drugs that stood out to me on that list. One was ciprofloxacin, stood out as one that a number of people cited as a shortage. Another one was losartan, was another one that folks said they're having a hard time getting. So yeah, I think it goes to even broader issues about our supply channels being so reliant on overseas production of the active pharmaceutical ingredients and of the finished products. So I was talking to a reporter yesterday about this. She asked, what do people do? You know, when there's a shortage, what do you do? You just, is the patient just out of luck or what happens? And I said, most of the time, the pharmacist can find another, you know, a therapeutic substitution or a different product that'll likely do the job just as well or about as well. But they have to ask the pharmacist, the physician, the prescriber has to ask the pharmacist. So the medication experts, pharmacists can usually find something to replace that drug that's in short supply, but they have to ask. It's also a crazy busy time in the pharmacy. So if you have to ask the pharmacist for an alternative, to please bring your patients and give them a little bit of time to be able to respond to your question for an alternative drug, we can almost always find something that will work similarly, at least to get the patient by.
There's usually an alternative. And to your point about patients, it may take a little time to source that alternative product. But at the end of the day, I think community pharmacists are pretty adept at trying to find something to take care of their patients. If it involves an alternative product, something they have to get from a secondary wholesaler, they're going to try to do that. So continuing the economic theme here, another issue that's popped up in the survey is taxes. And roughly 3/4 of our members are concerned that Congress is going to raise taxes on their businesses. And we talk about pharmacists as healthcare providers, and they've certainly showcased that during the pandemic. But at the end of the day, they're also small business owners, and taxes are really important to them. So what are your thoughts about that? Obviously, there's no good time to raise taxes, but particularly with all the other pressures going on, now may be an especially difficult time if taxes are being raised.
None of us want to pay more in taxes, and especially small business owners. We're already regulated and taxed to death, and so to tax us more would really choke off the economic recovery that we've seen as a country, which has really largely been driven by small businesses, as it usually is. So I think it would really be foolhardy for the administration to increase taxes. Certainly NCPA would very much be in opposition to any kind of increased taxes. And we know also that small business owners, it's really a disproportionate tax because money that they're taxed on is often money that they're not putting in their pocket. They're plowing it back into their business to build their business, to build the infrastructure, hire more employees, grow their business. So to tax them on those dollars that are going back into stimulating the economy, stimulating the business, is really bad policy. And again, NCPA is and would be opposed to any kind of increase on small businesses, just like we were very much in support of policies like the PPP program that was really a lifesaver. I mean, that was a good policy for our members at a time when it was desperately needed, and NCPA advocated for that. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff being thrown against the wall in Washington, D.C., and I would hope that increasing taxes on small businesses is one that would die a quick death.
So, Doug, one of the things that really struck me about the survey is that with all of the economic challenges out there, the bad economic conditions, DIR still comes out as the biggest headache for community pharmacies. And maybe headache is not an appropriate word here. It's certainly much more than a headache. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, pharmacy DIR, I mean, that's the number one thing hurting our members. And we're seeing averages of, depending on the size of the store, about $100,000 being clawed back in pharmacy DIR. It continues to be a problem that, you know, the contracts that are signed with pharmacy DIR threaten the viability of independent pharmacy. NCPA has filed a lawsuit, joined later in that lawsuit by APHA, a number of other organizations. So we're hopeful there, but we're not putting all of our eggs in that basket. We're also working with Congress. You know, if there's a reconciliation bill where they're going to spend $1 or 2 or 3 trillion, we would like to see pharmacy DIR included in that. And if it's not there, then we'll go back to, we're already going to CMS and we'd like to go through that process. But one way or the other, the inability to know what you're getting paid at the point of dispensing is unsustainable. You know, I saw a recent statistic that in the last 5 years, the percentage of claims where the pharmacy doesn't know what they're going to be paid has gone from about 15% to 75%.
Wow.
75% of the time, our guys don't have any idea if what they're being told they're being reimbursed is actually what they're going to be paid. And that's because of the pharmacy DIRs, the GERs, the BERs, and any other acronym that PBMs want to invent to claw back money to make it opaque. But that is unsustainable. We have to know what we're getting paid at the point of dispense so we can know where our business is. So that's one of the reasons why NCPA continues to have as our top priority changing the pharmacy payment model. And pharmacy DIR reform is one of the ways to change the pharmacy payment model. A second is we're advocating for NADAC. So NADAC is a pricing benchmark plus a dispensing fee of at least $10 to $12 based on cost of dispense surveys in Medicaid and Medicare. It's another policy that we're advocating for. And then the third is getting paid for our services. You know, CPSN is NCPA's solution to get paid for our services. And that's slowly working. But all of those things have to go into changing the pharmacy payment model. It's just this unpredictability it's ridiculous. It's just not a sustainable business model.
Yeah, I mean, the fees are egregious in and of themselves, and to not be able to know what they're going to be or to be able to plan is just, like you said, an unsustainable way to run your business. I know there are a couple of things going on in Congress. Certainly, our advocacy team is keeping an eye on those. Talking about PBMs, another big concern that we haven't touched on yet is vertical integration, particularly with regard to the PBMs. Can you talk about that a little bit in terms of how that may be affecting our members?
Yeah, so vertical integration, you're talking about, you know, the CVS buying Caremark and then CVS Caremark buying Aetna, Cigna, Express Scripts, United Healthcare Optum. CVS Caremark is probably the most egregious example where they've got the brick and mortar pharmacies plus the PBM plus the health plan, but all three of the big three. We used to call them PBMs, and they are, but they're really insurance plans that have a division called the PBM. And one heartening thing with that, there's new leadership at the Federal Trade Commission that seems to actually be concerned about vertical integration. Previous administrations of the FTC, and not necessarily Republican, not necessarily Democrat, have really approved almost every vertical integration, whether it be healthcare or in other industries. But again, we are seeing some recent signs of life there. We have had a number of conversations with the FTC, some good one-on-one conversations, sharing the challenges, the problems that these vertical integrations are creating for small business, which they care some about, but they care a lot more about how they're affecting consumers. So I'm optimistic. It's taken a long time for us to get to this point. It's not going to unwind quickly. But I think there is some hope to unwind, not so much unwind the mergers. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but unwind how prevalent these vertical integrations are. I do think there's also some optimism for some oversight of these vertical integrations that we haven't seen. And what we've seen from the FTC has basically been that the vertical integration, if someone tells us it saves the consumer a penny, then it's good. Even though the quality may be less, the accessibility may be less, and it may snuff out small business, they didn't seem to care about those things. And in CPA, I mean, we got the FTC to review the CVS Caremark merger. We appealed to Congress, and Congress twisted their arm and got them to review that. We sued the federal government on ESI Medco to try to block that merger. And we're very active on the United Health Change merger, being very vocal to the Department of Justice about that merger and how the harm it would cause. So optimistic in this area, John. You know, I think there's some possibilities here of it not just being the open door for every merger that's come along, like we've seen from previous FTCs and DOJs.
That's obviously encouraging. And, you know, what's encouraging to me is that our members are so engaged with these issues that are affecting their businesses. So that's really encouraging. And we've asked them to respond with their comments. They've certainly executed on that. So, Doug, any other things that you'd like to share regarding the survey? I think we always look forward to getting that survey because it really showcases, you know, what's going on in the marketplace with our members. But anything more to add on that front?
Yeah, I'll just circle back to the start where we do these surveys to make sure our finger is on the pulse of what's going on with our members. And it's not only surveys. NCPA has for a long time, we've had committees that focus on different areas, technology, compounding, national legislation as examples. And we just had those committee meetings just the last couple of days here in Alexandria, Virginia. And hearing from them face to face, hearing from, you know, 75 of our members is always enlightening. It affirms a lot of the things that we're working on, but it also provides new insights. So just really appreciate that. And also from a reality standpoint related to the survey, there were several of our members on those committees who had to send their regrets the last minute because it was just too busy at the pharmacy with booster shots, now pediatric vaccines, monoclonal antibodies, plus flu season, plus staffing shortages. So the reality of the survey played out even with the committee attendance and certainly with the committee members who are here. So always trying to make sure that we are hearing our members and doing everything that we can to help them help their businesses.
Thanks, Doug. And I'm glad you mentioned pediatric vaccines. That we've got lots of resources to help our members, you know, become comfortable in that space. So we encourage them to take a look at all the information we have on the website. We've got a video, we've got a recorded webinar. So lots of good information there. Thank you again, Doug, for being on today. I wanted to close by mentioning our multiple locations conference, which is coming up February 23rd through 26th in Clearwater, Florida. Registration actually starts or opens today. So we encourage you to check out our website.